Alrighty, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Beauty and the Beast Physical Therapy and Strength Conditioning Podcast. I am joined, as always, by my host, Dr. Ross Childs.
How's it going, everyone? Sorry we weren't here last week. I gave Adam the week off. It was actually just poor planning on my part, so things have been busy. Adam's working hard behind the scenes, and things are just busy right now with life. So we're going to continue with our stress series. So today we'll be talking about emotional stress or non-mechanical stress, if we want to think of it that way, and basically the way that it affects our body. So we'll jump into that in just a minute. As always, I like to ask Adam what he's been up to. So Adam, go ahead and give us an update on just life.
Yeah, things have been good. Now that it's starting to get, I know you usually give the weather update, but now that it's starting to get a little bit warmer and stuff, and the sun's out more consistently, it's nice getting back in shorts again, and just finally getting through finishing up those courses that I was working on, and now I have a brand new program that I'm going to be coming out with, personalized training for 2 months, meal plans written for you, literally like print and post them on the fridge and follow them, ingredients, all that stuff, along with grocery lists. Again, print and go to the store, that simple. All that kind of good stuff. So if anybody's interested in that, you can, you know, comment underneath this in the when we post it on Facebook, or respond to my email address in the description, excuse me, and we can go from there.
How many hours a week do you spend doing these types of the classes, the books, the programs? How many hours a week do you put in doing that stuff?
It's become a little bit more recently, just because, you know, up until the last couple months, it's just been like, oh my God, build the business. Oh my God, I need to eat. Oh my God, I need to be able to put food on the table and pay my bills. Just, I need to get people in. And now I'm able to kind of like create some stuff to, you know, like the free course and some other things.
Sure.
Probably over the last few weeks, probably like 10 hours a week, maybe.
It's a significant amount.
Yeah.
And then with that, with all the other things that you talk about, is the stress response.
Exactly.
So I could already hear it in your voice. So that's kind of a nice segue. And for me, patients are keeping me busy, which is good. I have no complaints. People get outside and want to be a little bit more active. And then next thing you know, they're in here. So I'm very fortunate that I'm busy. And I'll never take it for granted. So. But it doesn't allow me much time to work on the business. So, you know, my time outside of here is usually sending out home exercise programs and following up with emails and stuff like that. But again, I'd still rather work 100 hours a week for myself than 40 for someone else.
Completely
so
agree.
I'll never go back to a regular physical therapy clinic. But so speaking of the stress response, stress is something that we've all experience at one time or another, and some people more than others, and some people experience it, you know, with much more adverse events compared to others as well. And we have to remember that the stress response itself is normal. So when people say stress, that usually comes with a negative connotation. And you say, oh, I'm stressed. Well, we have to remember that working out it causes you to be stressed. But it's a eustress, it's a positive stress. And then we have distress, and then everything in between. And we really want to understand the difference between the two. You know, really your body's response is going to be the same, the adaptation. The result of that is usually going to depend on if it's going to be negative for us or not. You know, so we enjoy working out, so it's a lot different for us. It's a good stress whether we hate the workout or not. We still enjoy it. We voluntarily put ourselves in those positions. But, you know, let's say you do have financial stressors. You know, that weighs on you.
Mm-hmm.
There's really two ways you can go about it. You can let it continue to beat you down, or you can do something about it. You know, and then hopefully by continuing to do something about it, you have a positive adaptation from that, and then the stress response calms down until the next time you have to deal with that again. Versus the other avenue is you kind of ruminate on it, you perseverate on it, and then that causes negative physiologic responses. So the goal of today is really to highlight what actually goes on, because it really is a wonderful mechanism for whoever or whatever made us. It really is a great mechanism of our body. You know, we are quite unique organisms in that sense. But it happens to all animals. We were actually just talking about the book, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. And for anyone who's interested about, you know, especially mammalian stress responses, it's really a good book by Robert Sapolsky that kind of takes you through all the intricacies of the stress response and general adaptation system, which we'll touch upon. And Adam read it at my recommendation, and he thought it was good too. And for me, that book really helped me to identify what the stress response was and how we can use it in a positive way, or how it affects us positively versus negatively. And unfortunately, society doesn't necessarily assist with that. You know,
The complete opposite.
Correct. I think it puts us into a perpetual cycle of stress, yeah. which we'll talk about. So, Adam, what's your understanding of stress and its response on the body, or the way we respond to it? Either way.
Yeah, so we tend to think of stress, and part of the reason that I specifically, you know, wanted to bring this topic up is because a lot of people talk about how, you know, stress can affect your immune system and it can make you tired and all this other stuff. But in terms of how it can physically affect your body, like your muscles, your joints, how it can cause pain, how it can, like, we tend to think in terms of like mental, psychological stress and physical ability as being two completely different things. Like they're walled off. I feel stressed and I go to the gym and I've been stressed for 3 weeks, and over those 3 weeks I felt like absolute crap at the gym, or I wake up in a ton of pain. But those two things couldn't possibly be related, because psychological stress, it's a head thing, it's not a body thing.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case. And the more that I've come to kind of realize how many stressors I have and how to like work with them, the more I've noticed that when my stress kicks up, my pain kicks up.
And also so, your motivation to, yes, anything else goes down.
Absolutely. And, you know, I told you before we started that I was probably going to be leaning a little bit on you for this, because you know quite a bit more about this than I do. But knowing how, like, cortisol is the big one, or one of the big ones, that, you know, affects, it breaks down, it can break down muscle tissue, it can break down bone, it can, you know, in small doses, cortisol is important because it's the stress hormone. You talked about a stress response in situations where you need to be stressed. But that shouldn't be happening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, I was trying to think of a good analogy, and you may think, this went well in my head, but I don't know if it's going to come out stupid.
Yeah, we'll walk our way through it.
The way I think about it is, like, for any of you that have kids, and let's say that you're sitting on the couch with your son or whatever, mm-hmm, or whoever at home, or just somebody, and they're sitting next to you, and just like with an open palm, they're just like slightly like hitting you on the shoulder, like you barely even notice, right? You barely notice, but it's there. Something's there. And under normal circumstances, they do it a couple times, you don't even notice, whatever. Now, let's say that for the next 3 weeks, you sit on the couch and that person is just popping you in the shoulder. Over time, that's going to start to hurt. You're going to get bruised. It's going to be like you are in doing little things over a long period of time. This was much better in my head, by the way.
Nope. So I think what you're trying to say, and it's a process of it's called temporal summation. So basically it's what's happening is there's multiple signals getting fired. However, that longer that signal stays, the less it takes to actually be noticed. So
right
now, all of a sudden, you know, that small little tap becomes louder and louder and more annoying. And so you just identified what chronic pain is. That's exactly what chronic pain is, because that signal just keeps floating around. But now all of a sudden your body keeps cranking up the volume so that, yep, you'll pay attention, not knowing that, hey, there's not as big a threat here, but your body's so sensitized to it now that your alarm system's going off immediately. And we do know cortisol is a big player in that, because I always describe it as, okay, think of yourself as a caveman. Back in the day, you had to go hunt, you know, and you were out, and then all of a sudden the saber-toothed tiger turned on you and started chasing you. Well, you need to be in that stress response to survive. You know, you need to then, you know, dump cortisol through your system, which is then going to mobilize carbs, fats, and proteins for energy to get you out of harm's way, and then your body comes down from it, and all's well in the world. Okay, great. Even if that happened once a week, it's still normal. However, in today's world, choose the saber-toothed tiger, kids, yeah, your spouse, financial issues, a boss always beating down your neck, the car just broke, you know, the water heater is going to go, Christmas is coming up, I don't have money for birthday presents.
Your Keurig just broke. That happened to me this morning.
Yeah, yeah. You know, God damn it, they got my macchiato wrong. Whatever it may be, but that saber-toothed tiger is always there now. So unfortunately, your body can't stay at such a high stress response for long periods of time. So we just have to recognize that. But understanding it's the stages that of the stress response are normal, whether it's an acute stress, chronic stress, emotional stress, physical stress, it's always going to be the same. But the phases can change. So we kind of touched upon, or I said, the general adaptation syndrome. And this was Hans Sale. I don't remember. I don't know how you say his last name. But in the 50s, he said, you know, our stress response is an alarm system. So essentially, and there's three phases for it. There's going to be phase one, which is the alarm system. You know, and really this is to how your body reacts to the stress. Your sympathetic nervous system kind of goes into fight or flight mode. Not kind of, it does. Fight, flight, or fright now they call it. Because if you think of cats don't fight or flee right away. Usually they stand there back arched. It's like, oh, you can't see me.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, the T-Rex is here. It's blind. Stay still. It can't see you. And then it will either run away. It's going to fight when it's backed into a corner. So that's what our body will do. So for a lot of us, if that saber-toothed tiger turns on us, boom, we instantly, I got to get the fuck out of here. Whew, we run. Then we have the next stage, which is the resistance stage. And that's going to be our adaptation to stress. So we get out of harm's way. And then everything can calm back down. Hormone levels come back down. Our physiologic response gets back to quote unquote normal. And then we turn into the exhaustive phase. Our body just went through that traumatic event. So now it's going to need time to recover because now my resources are depleted. And that's going to be the same for everything. You can take those same three phases and apply it to anything. Working out. You know you want to do a heavy deadlift. So you walk up to the bar, you warm yourself up. All right, this is the one rep max. You start pulling, you hit that threshold where you're like, oh shit, I don't know if I can lift this. Alarm phase. Now all of a sudden your body kicks in, you're able to lift it. You put it down, your body grows stronger. Yeah, you're tired afterwards. But then the next time you go to do it, 1 to 2 weeks later, you're a little bit stronger. Your body has already adapted to that stress.
It's funny. I always, when we start talking about stress and this type of thing, I always remember I don't remember what class it was in. It was one of my college courses, probably, I don't know, one of my exercise science classes. And I remember the professor specifically saying, talking about, like, you know, everybody's heard the example of the mother whose child is trapped under the car and they're able to raise up part of the car in order to get the child to safety, whatever. What they don't tell you about is the aftermath when the mother is in severe pain, torn muscles, torn ligaments, whatever, because their body overrid what their, let me rephrase that, their hormones and their stress response overrode what their tissue could actually accomplish in a scenario where it was extreme distress.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying about the kind of the come down from it.
Well, and the come down from it, ideally, that's going to help with the adaptation response. It's just your body needs that exhaustive phase so that then, okay, I'm depleted. I need to then kind of chill out. You know, say like back in the day, they'd go for the hunt. And I'm talking again, 10,000 years ago. They'd go for the hunt, which may take 3 days. Mm-hmm. They finally kill something, they come back, they eat it, and then they chill out until they have to go hunt a week later, or however long it would be. You know, but it's not the, oh shit, I gotta rush to the grocery store, which stresses me out, because I've already been at work for 8 hours, and I'm tired, and I just want to get home. By the time I get home, it's gonna be 8:30 at night, and by the time I get to bed, it's not gonna be until 10:30. Oh shit, I gotta do this now, so now it's midnight. Shit, I gotta be up the next morning at 6. Frig, I want to work out first. Now I got to be up at 5 so then I can get to work. Crap, I got to shower. Damn, I forgot my deodorant. Now I got to go to work. Oh my God, I have a meeting with my boss. Oh my God, I'm eating shit for lunch. Oh well, I'll just get pizza. And that same cycle occurs every day for all of us.
Right.
Now with that fight or flight response should not be turned on all the time. You know, with our autonomic nervous system, it breaks down into the sympathetic nervous system, and then we have the parasympathetic. We are so friggin' good at turning on our fight or flight response. Like, without even thinking about it, we can get worked up about anything. But not many of us are really good at honing in on our rest and digest system, our parasympathetic response. There needs to be a balance between the two, and the world we live in just does not allow for that. You know, and that's why a lot of people are focusing on meditation and yoga and being mindful and being present. Because that is, you're not worrying about everything else, which can work anyone up. Now, if we take, you know, the person that I just talked about who talked about grocery shopping and the gym and whatnot, you know, if their body's never able to relax, research shows you're more likely to pick bad foods. You know, you're going to pick things that make you feel good, so sugar. We're also going to see that you're probably going to skip working out, or if you do, it's not going to be an effective workout, or you're probably going to skip warming up, you're going to skip the mobility stuff, you're going to skip whatever it is that you wouldn't normally skip.
Whatever you don't want to do.
Exactly. You know, and then your sleep quality sucks. And we already know your stress management sucks because of everything that I already listed. So it goes back to those same four pillars that we've talked about multiple times. However, you're not able to utilize what should be helping you because now everything becomes a negative. Now with that, increased cortisol levels in the short term, very positive for us. In the long term, the longer that cortisol sits in our body, it creates interleukins or pro-inflammatory mediators. And specifically, they're called interleukins that create inflammation. So what do we think is going to happen if we have a low systemic level of inflammation at all times? That's just going to perpetuate that stress response. You know, again, you're not ever able to get back because now there's a low level of inflammation. Now, you know, your C-reactive proteins may be thrown off. Maybe it's not enough to, like, ibuprofen's not going to take care of it because you didn't slam your knee off the ground. It's not an acute inflammation, but now you're fighting that low level of inflammation at all times, which then also creates another round of stress, which then your body dumps out more cortisol, which then the longer it sits there, you end up making more inflammation. You then take in sugary things, which if you take sugar in large amounts, is very acidic, which can then also lead to inflammation. And then your tissue becomes inflamed. And this is the interesting part. This is why I'm big into kind of foam rolling, self-massage, breathing patterns, rest or digest response. Because your tissue does become stiff over time. So now if your tissue becomes stiff, now your joints are going to hurt, which also increases pain. So there is a very physical response to it. And we know that there's a book by John Sarno called Healing Your Back. He was a physiatrist back in the 50s and 60s. And he has his own institute now in New York called Healing Your Back. And his was the first book that mentioned tension myositis syndrome. And now he switched it to myoneural syndrome, which basically it was just you have emotional stress that's manifesting itself in very physical ways. So when he was all for, I'm not even going to send you to PT, you need to go see a mental health counselor. So he was all for that. That's essentially what pain science education is today. It's trying to figure out all the different variables that can lend itself to the physical pain that we deal with. So we do know there's a very emotional response to stress. And through blood tests, we also know there's a very, there's a large physiologic change too that can then manifest itself in physical ways. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what we deal with individuals on, we ourselves deal with that. So You know, it's the release in certain hormones, the inability to cope with the stress. That's also another big one. We can't just blame it on the stress response. It's the inability to cope with the given stressors that then perpetuate that cycle even more. And the list just goes on and on. You know, the tighter that our muscles are, we have decreased ability for oxygenated blood to get in and out of an area. It's not halted, it's just reduced. Yeah. So there are times I'll say to patients, think of a stagnant pool of water, and that's just a description of it, so they have an idea of what I'm talking about. Well, we got to get things moving to get nutrient-rich, oxygen-rich blood flow to the area, which is going to be very beneficial for us, which is then going to allow us to move better, hopefully decrease or desensitize movement patterns for us so we can work out. And then we work out, then we start to feel better and make better nutritional choices. And then we start to lose weight, and then we feel better about ourselves. So now the emotions come into it and our stress management is better. But again, it goes back to those same four pillars.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure you have clients that have emotional stressors. How do you implement some type of, or first off, do you try to implement anything with them to identify that to hopefully give them better results?
So the first thing that I do with pretty much anybody dealing with those mental stressors is a lot of times it just comes down to pointing out the things that they're saying that they don't realize they're saying. You know, like what? Pointing out patterns is probably a better way to say it. So, you know, when this happens, I'm always stressed. I'm like, well, do you think maybe it could be because of X, Y, and Z? Oh, I never thought of that. You know, do you ever notice that we tend to have these conversations every time on Tuesday when you know, Johnny has to be at soccer practice and you didn't get any sleep last night because on Tuesday mornings you have to train at 5 a.m. and on Monday nights Johnny has a soccer game until 9. You know, and you have to get home and you have to cook dinner and all this other stuff. You only get 2 hours of sleep every Monday night. Like, do you notice that, like, I never thought about that. Okay, maybe I need to. And then beyond that, if I'm still having trouble with somebody, it's usually starting to point out positives or helping them to find positives. Because the more that we are in stress, the more we see the negative. Because we are designed to be, I don't remember what the percentages are, I've heard them in the past, but of how much faster someone will adopt a habit when exposed to physical pain compared to, you know, non-pain, just habit building. So, like, if something is always causing us a negative emotion, like you said, the grocery store is packed, get the hell out of my way, get out of my way, get out of the aisle, why are you holding, like, this is me. 3/4 of the time. I didn't sleep last night. My boss is an ass. Like, get out of the way if you're going to move that slow. Like,
I love how you just
why are you driving in the fast lane if you're going to move that slow? Like, if you are constantly seeing, like, negative after negative after negative after negative,
yeah,
you're continuing to reinforce that cycle. And so then you start to see negatives everywhere. The more that you can start to look at positives, the more you start to break out of those patterns, and the more you start to recover. Because the more positive you can be, and you can, like, say, oh, this is all hippy-dippy bullshit, but it's not. The more negative you are, the worse your body is going to respond to pretty much everything. The more positive you are, the better your body is going to respond to pretty much anything. Because you know what happens when you're positive about things? You do things, even the things you don't necessarily want to do.
You fucking feel better.
Yeah.
So let's just go back to some of you said.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'd like to know. First, hippy dippy, awesome, love it. Is your boss really an ass?
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I love it when patients come in that don't necessarily realize that I'm the owner.
Yeah.
Or people will just hear me and talk, and I'm like, man. You know, my boss doesn't give me any time off. He's a real asshole. I tell him to go F himself all the time. And people are like, oh my God. And then they learn after the fact. Like, you're so funny. You are your boss. I'm like, and that's why I can talk to him the way that I do. Real piece of shit. And then the grocery store thing, you know, that's kind of me. I drive past Market Basket and see the 465,000 cars. Yeah, fuck that. Hannaford it is.
Yep. We've started going on, like, like Friday or Saturday nights.
Late at night.
Just, yeah, like an hour before they close.
Have to.
Yep.
Absolutely have to.
It's like Nirvana.
Oh, it's beautiful in there.
It's just so much room.
Oh my God. You don't have to deal with people. It's fantastic. The only other time I've seen Market Basket not busy, Sundays during a Patriot game.
Yep. I mean, granted, I'm usually watching the game, so hardly ever there, exactly. But if I have had to go...
I think I was coming back from Mass, and I was like, I'll just go now.
Yeah.
But it was like, where the hell is everyone?
Absolutely.
Oh, everyone's home watching the game. So, now, I deal with the stress response a lot when people are here, and quite often it's the emotional response, but there's something that you touched upon that I think is very important to a lot of people. It's you try to focus on the positives. What we know now with the stress response is that the words that we use with someone can hurt them as well as help them. So, you know, there was a research, and there's tons of research papers out on this, but one specifically that came out in the Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy, I think in 2021, called Sticks and Stones. And it was talking about the role of words and patient outcomes. So instead of telling someone, oh, you have decreased range of motion, you can't squat, you have this, you have that, whereas you say, hey, you know what, your range of motion's a little off, you know, but overall we have a solid foundation that we can work with. That sounds a whole lot better than just giving them a list of 25 things that's wrong with them, well, because now they feel like shit.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right.
No, all I was going to say is that it's kind of been there's kind of been a little bit of a shift in the fitness industry about that too. So when I first started in the fitness industry, we, you know, brought everybody in, we did an FMS with them, we told them, I mean, we were always very careful about, like, you know, if you have shoulder impingement, then maybe we shouldn't be pressing overhead right now. We'll retest and blah, 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 blah. So, like, we never really tried to, we always tried to frame it in, like, here's where we're at now, but we're going to work on, improving this. And I think that that's what a lot of places were doing at that point, whether it be FMS, whether it be some other assessment, whatever it may be, a modified one, whatever. And I think a lot of fitness facilities, coaches, etc. now are starting to move away from that. They're still doing, like, assessments. They just do it a little bit more covertly. I remember when we went to the Raising the Bar event, you know, almost 2 months ago now, Kevin Carr from Mike Boyles was talking about how they'll, you know, they may not bring somebody in for an FMS, but... you know, halfway through the warm-up, touch your toes. Like, just little things here and there, just to, you get a feel for, like, how they can move without having to necessarily take them through a series of tests where, and then at the end tell them, oh, your range of motion in your hips is terrible, your ankle mobility is awful, your shoulders are terrible, you can't even do a push-up. I mean, not that anybody would say that, but try putting someone on the ground and tell them to try and push up when there's no chance in hell they're going to do it. It's debilitating.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind when you're talking about somebody who may already be, you know, an older person who may already be nervous about getting down and up off the floor.
Yeah.
And depending on where you work, you may not ever really run into that too much. But we ran into that a pretty decent amount when, you know, I was at Get Fit. Just clients coming in looking to feel better, and they didn't want to get down on the floor. They're afraid they weren't going to be able to get back up.
Yeah.
So you're taking that person and you're telling them, try to do a trunk stability push-up.
Which is challenging for people who even are good at regular push-ups.
Exactly.
Because of your hand placement.
Yep.
Now, the problem is with that, you know, here we are in trying to objectify everything.
Right.
So we give scores, and, you know, based on the score, those who score less than this, you're more prone to that. However, the second we lump someone into a category, you know, basically that... especially if it's not the top tier, then all of a sudden, you know, patients, clients, members, whatever you choose to call them, whatever in your respected field, they don't understand. We're looking at it from a standpoint, if you're a third tier individual right now, can we just get you to a level two? However, they hear, oh, I'm tier three, I suck them at the bottom.
Yep.
So there's always, well, why are we doing this? You know, but again, you know,
I enjoy the FMS. Do I put everyone through it? No.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater in terms of assessments. I'm just saying I think there's been a little bit of a movement in how we approach them versus bringing in, you know, Grandma Janice and trying to get her to do a deep squat and, you know, telling her that she needs to improve 50 things.
Well, the problem is then that creates the stress response. They feel bad about themselves. They are now already having anxiety about testing again, and they're not going to want to do it. So this stress response, really, we can tie it back to anything. I don't care what it is. You know, even think about when you're driving on the highway, someone cuts you off, and you have to tap your brakes a little bit, and you're like, holy shit!
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a stress response. You know, and then you realize, you then assess the situation. We're all alive. Yeah. Got all my limbs. No one got hurt. All right, we're still moving along. So there was your alarm response. Then you went into the middle phase, right into the resistance phase, and then exhaustion after that. You know, so the acute response, again, is very normal. You know, it's normal for all of us. It's when it no longer becomes an acute response and then it becomes a prolonged habitual response. That's when it becomes more problematic. That's what we see in today's world. You know, because if, again, you're let's say you're hiking in the woods, you know, you see a bear in the distance, you immediately stop. You're like, all right, it's not charging me. I'm gonna go the other way. All right, very normal. But now let's say your financial stuff got worse, people weren't coming in, and now every day you have to think about that bear. That gets a lot worse for you. Next thing you know, you don't want to eat. Next thing you know, you're not working out the way that you want to. Next thing you know, the second your head hits the pillow, you start thinking of everything.
Yep.
So we've all been there. You know, the unfortunate reality is a lot of people can't get out of it. And that's why, unfortunately, we're seeing depression, anxiety, chronic fatigue syndrome, you know, fibromyalgia can be lumped into that, whether people choose to believe in it or not. That's definitely in there. You know, and then take those people who then, oh, I'm going to turn on the news and watch the news today, which is 300% negative. Nope. And now that makes them feel even worse about themselves. So it's just the society we live in does not help us at all. And it's always interesting. You know, it's I always used to think like type A personalities, they got to be real good at managing stress. That was my initial thought, you know, and then but come to find out, it's actually the type B personalities are actually better at it. Because they're able to let things roll off their shoulders.
Yep.
Whereas more of a type A executive is so used to being in control, they can't take when this pain doesn't go away yesterday. So personality type plays into it. Again, coping strategies definitely play into it. I'd say most of the people, and a lot with my intake forms, it's very, very thorough. And it asks about stress management. If you had to rate your stress management, how would you rate it? 0 being poor, 10 being amazing. I'd say more often than not, people come in and are rating it as 5 or less. So that just means so many people have a poor stress management strategy.
Yeah.
You know, and how do you manage stress?
So I've gotten much better about this as I've, because I've kind of shifted my priorities in a way. I, over the last few years, have learned that I can't just try and do it all. It just doesn't work. And it's been a little, I'll admit, it's been a little bit easier since I left my former job, because I'm not expected to be in classes for, you know, 5-6 hours and that kind of thing. So it's not a perfect comparison, but starting to realize, like, sometimes it took setting boundaries. I'm not going to respond to any emails after 7. Yeah. Or whatever, pick a time. I'm working my day around going to the gym, not the other way.
Correct.
I'm not going to try and go to the gym when I have time. I'm going to the gym from 9 to 10:30, and I will, if that means I have to get up a little bit earlier to get a little bit more work done, or it means I have to work when I get back, fine. But I am working my day around that because I know that that's important. I try and catch up on sleep if I have a night where, you know, like those days that I get up at 5 a.m. or whatever, 4:30, because I know that I need to get stuff done that day and I want to get to the gym and all that sort of stuff. I work better in the morning. I've come to find out that if I try and sleep till 8 and then go to the gym and then do all my work after that, it doesn't get done.
Sure.
And that causes me stress and that I can't sleep well. So that sometimes means I got to get up earlier. I get more stuff done. I go to the gym and, you know, maybe I take, you know, a short nap or whatever because I'm tired midday. Whatever. But just like prioritizing sleep. Don't eat like an asshole.
Eating like an asshole. That's a key one.
Get my training in. Just like simple stuff like that. And the other thing is giving myself some grace when I feel like I have too much to do. I think that's what happens to a lot of people, if I'm being honest. I think that, yes, they maybe don't work out as much as they should. They maybe don't get enough sleep. But they're so in their head. They sit down on the couch after what you said. They worked 8 hours. They got little Johnny to soccer practice and back. They went to the store. And they sit down on the couch. And rather than saying, shit, my day's over. This is time for me to just, like, relax. They're in their head with, I need to get this done, I need to get this done, I need to get this done. And then they go to bed and they wake up and they start it all over again.
Mm.
Give yourself some grace. And maybe, and the other piece of this too is I have diagnosed ADHD and like I don't lean on that. But I know, but I've come to realize that if I have a day where I'm hyper-focused on something, one of these course days where I just sit there at the computer for, you know, 4 hours writing emails, I go, I eat, I come back, I write for 4 hours, I get another, you know, just this hyper-focused, I know that the next day I'm going to be cooked.
Sure.
Just because, I mean, in that amount of hyper-focus, most people can't keep that up for that long, but because I can have difficulty managing that, and I lean into that now, I know that, okay, tomorrow I'm going to feel cooked, but I'm going to get as much shit done while I'm in the zone as I can. And then tomorrow I'll wake up, I'll get the stuff I have to get done, like the stuff that's my non-negotiables, just like reaching out to clients and little stuff like that. The little stuff, but the important stuff, yeah. I mean. And then if after that I'm sitting at the computer and I can't even like put together thoughts to write another email, then I'm not fucking doing it that day.
Yeah, that's when you should just watch Instagram Reels or yep. TikTok.
Yep.
Which I go down the rabbit hole with.
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
It is.
So that just, you know, that proves that we all deal with it. I mean, that's a great example of it. You know, for me, I usually tell people, you know what? Don't spread yourself so thin.
Yeah.
I should probably follow my own advice. Because I'm just spread across the board. Like, my day, if I wasn't so good at time management, I'd be a goddamn basket case. And I, you know, people will say, well, how many times a week do you work out? Well, minimum 3. Because if I do less than 3, I feel like shit. Mentally, I feel like yeah. shit. And then it's like, wow, 5 times a week. I'm like, is it okay to work out that much? Yeah, it's okay to work out that much. And if I didn't, then I probably would have to be on some type of medication. Because working out is my form of antidepressants,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I need to make sure that I keep up with my medication at the right dosage at the right time, or else I'm gonna lose my shit, you know? For people to say that they never have stress, either they know something that I don't or they're lying, you know, because everyone has stress.
Right.
It's how we go about managing it.
Right.
But, you know, I know we talked about a lot today and I think we covered what we wanted to. We talked about
the
physiologic response and then kind of just gave our own takes on things. So I don't think we went too far off the beaten path like we normally do. But just understand, guys, this stuff is normal. We all experience it. You know, we're all in this fight together. Acute stressors, very, very normal. But as they become more chronic, as they become habitual, that's when we can start to see a lot of problems with it. So there are a lot of great documents out there, resources to help with stress management. You know, we by no means are experts on it. You know, we can read research articles. We can read all that stuff and relay it back to you. But again, we ourselves, we're always constantly working on it. So, you know, we're all enjoying this journey together. So if we come up with some magic way of dealing with it, we'll certainly let you know. But
can I ask you one quick question that I just thought of? And I won't, you don't go too far down the rabbit hole, just if you want to give a basic answer. So, headaches.
Yes.
What amount of, like, so for somebody that has consistent chronic headaches, how much do you think that it's stress related? I don't, and don't get me wrong, I'm not asking this because I have an answer. I don't know all the science behind, like the migraine science and all that stuff. I just often wonder if, how much of that is actually like a physiological
issue. I think stress plays into a lot of headaches more than we give it credit for. The problem is, you know, especially with all the research that's been done on migraines, you know, people are you know, we don't know why.
That's why I'm curious if you...
However, there's so many classifications of headaches now. It's absolutely ridiculous. Last time I checked, I think there was like four main categories, and then it broke down into subcategories, which there's like 15 different types of headaches right now.
Yeah.
So the ones that I typically will deal with are, of course, going to be our tension-type headaches, so more soft tissue stuff, which is definitely caused by stress.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. You know, then we have cluster headaches, which typically sometimes those can come on, and same thing with migraines, that we can have triggering events, but not all migraines are caused by stress. Okay. So it's hard to say. And then, of course, there's cervicogenic headaches, which is derived from the upper cervical spine when we have a lack of mobility there. And if we're super tight, it's going to cause hypomobility where we can't rotate our head. So I would say that the stress response plays into it a lot more than we give it credit for. Because especially with migraines, especially... Have you ever had a migraine before?
I mean, I'm not sure. I've had some pretty bad headaches, but I've never like felt the need to like... I've never felt to the point that I was like nauseous.
Sure.
So... I mean, maybe I have, but I also may not have.
Well, a lot of people self-diagnose. So hard time. Oftentimes when people check off, have you had headaches or migraines? I'll usually say, have you been diagnosed with them or is that a self-diagnosis? So, and then are you on medications for them? Oftentimes with that, we're going to have triggering events. They may have sensitivity to light and sound, and they need to sit in a dark room and so on and so forth. But if you've had them multiple times and you start to identify the triggers, you're going to build anxiety. So then that's just going to perpetuate it as well. So I would say in all different headache types, in some capacity, stress is a large contributing factor. So I probably could have just said yes.
No, that's no, that was a good, no, I sorry, that popped into my head. So
I mean, headaches are... We all have headaches.
Yeah.
I feel bad for those with cluster headaches and migraines, things like that. Too. So,
All
right, guys. We're at the end. Hopefully you got something out of this. If you have any questions about it, comments, concerns, anything, daydreams, you know, always feel free to leave it in the description. Feel free to email Adam or myself. We have all the information up for Adam's business as well as mine. So if you guys need to reach out to us, just let us know. But until then, we'll see you next week.
All right. Later, guys.
Bye.